Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned into Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your host, Jay and Trey. Hey there, all you Matt fans, ready for WrestleMania coming up this weekend? Yes, it's in front of people again, so once again, another sign of life returning to normality. Baseball in front of people this week as they open their season, and now wrestling again back in front of people. Should be fun. We had our Raw go-home show getting ready for WrestleMania tonight, and it was a little subdued, a little less crazy, a little less frantic than past years, I think. But I will see what our guests think of that when my guests eventually make it to the show. This is indeed Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on a Monday night, April the 5th, 2021. I'm Dre, and I am currently guestless. My co-host Jay texted me and said that his computer was giving him problems. He had to reboot, so he'll be on shortly. And our wrestling expert Jerry has had a hell of a time trying to connect. Just has not worked out for him through the computer. So this is him trying to get through on the phone line now. And what's interesting is he hasn't heard me at all every time he's tried to connect, so it might be me. I don't know. We'll find out in a second. Okay, Jerry, can you hear me now?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly fine. Yes, thank you. Welcome in.
Great. Thank you.
That was scary because Jason isn't here yet, so I didn't have anyone else on the line to see if it was a problem with me. I thought maybe it was, you know, something wrong with my connection. Every time I clicked you through, and I'm like, "Can you hear me?" and I heard nothing back, and I'm like, "Uh-oh." But nope, I'm fine. You're fine now. You sound great. And we're ready to get our WrestleMania preview started. Like I said, Jason will be along shortly. He texted me and said his computer was messed up, so he had to reboot. So he'll be in a second. But Jerry, the wrestling expert, does indeed join us once again for our WrestleMania preview. How's things going, Jerry?
Hanging in there. It's been a wild year.
Yeah, definitely. It's been something that none of us could ever have anticipated, and I actually went through having the coronavirus back in June, and so did my wife, and thankfully everything worked out, and we came out on the other end. Wasn't the really bad version that either one of us had to deal with, so that's definitely a blessing. And now we're both vaccinated and ready to get out here and experience the world again this year. And the wrestling, WrestleMania, gets to experience fans again, as they're going to actually have people there this time in Tampa. It won't be in the empty warehouse or the empty gymnasium like last year. So just right off the bat, that's an improvement, the fact that they're actually going to be performing in front of people.
Yeah, I could practically smell the event last year of like being in the performance center.
Yeah, very musty, a lot of Bengay, a lot of bad smells that you could imagine just how horrible it was. You're on the grandest stage of them all, and it's in an old gym, and yeah, that was not ideal for anybody, that's for sure. But they'll be back in the big stadium, the football stadium in Tampa, home of the Super Bowl champs, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I don't know how many people exactly they're going to have. It's not going to be, you know, a full stadium at all, but it's going to be some. And the whole year of basically performing in front of nobody, it's been so different because wrestling is so predicated on, is this working? Well, let's gauge the audience reaction. Let's see how they're reacting to it. Are they eating us up? Are they sitting on their hands? Are they booing? And they haven't had any of that this year. So, have you noticed a difference in the booking and in the way WWE has gone about so who they push and how they decide to push people? Because there hasn't been that So I think there's some things they've done and some people they've pushed that they wouldn't have done under normal circumstances when they had people to react to them.
It's been all over the place, throughout the year. But it seems like at WrestleMania time, it's kind of familiar names, familiar faces again, which is, probably one of the topics of discussion today, which is, there's been a real problem of creating new stars that are they're memorable outside of the WWE universe of fan base.
No, that's absolutely. I got that written down in my notes, pretty much verbatim. The creating new stars and trying to figure out who to push and who to hold back. And here we go again with the 50-year-olds and the near 50-year-olds in the main event and competing for the titles, which is just I don't think that's a good look myself. We now bring in Jay, the actual normal co-host. Jay, did you get the chance to see any of Raw? Did you just read about it? How caught up are you on the yearly soap opera?
I'm not as caught up as I normally would be just by watching my one episode of Raw every year, because I actually don't have live TV this year.
Okay.
So I tried it a totally different way, which I was following it on Twitter tonight. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, it's doing a little social media, aspect to it. So it's funny because when you brought me into the show and I could hear you and Jerry talking about, the lack of stars and the sort of like the stale. I thought that you just brought me into a recording of last year's show and the show and the year before that show and then the year before that show, because it seems like there's a recurring theme. Which I also was the recurring theme, it seemed like, to be in the Twitter responses, which is like, this is the least excited I've been for WrestleMania in a long time. And I was thinking, well, wait a minute, wouldn't that be, this is the least excited you've been since last year?
Yeah.
And then the year before that, and then the year before that. So that was sort of my general take from, and I'm assuming that the people who are tweeting on Twitter with the, a hashtag for WWE or WrestleMania or for WWE Raw are actual wrestling fans, that they're the ones that are, if you're going to take the time to actually go on social media and post something about it, you should at least have some interest in what you're talking about. So, it sounds like it's same old, reshuffle the deck. And like we talk about just about every year.
You're probably deeper now into wrestling Twitter than I ever have been, because as I've talked to you briefly about, the way I follow Twitter is maybe different than other people. I only follow a handful of people in each
right.
Area that I'm interested in, whether it's in NFL, NBA, baseball, wrestling, other entertainment fields, music and whatnot, and of course news. I feel like there's only a few. And, more than a few, I guess, but I only want to follow a few people in each field because I don't want to be overwhelmed by following, 20 or 30 NFL writers all tweeting the same Adam Schefter tip and et cetera, with every sport. So I'm actually not that familiar with all of wrestling Twitter or the over-encompassing beauty of WWE fans on Twitter, which must really have been a treat for you.
I was getting the general complaints, and some people, you could tell, like, some people who were just really into it, like, really excited, and they're posting highlights of the show, and they thought, as basically, they were just watching the greatest thing ever, but I would say that the overall reaction was sort of like, meh, was, I'd say, the overall reaction.
And what was your reaction to the Go Home Raw, Jerry? Because I know mine was, I remember the previous shows that we've done where we've kind of almost laughed at how crazy some of the things that they were trying to do on the Go Home Raws, and whether it's Undertaker stabbing Brock Lesnar in the head with a ink pen, things like that, where we're just like, okay, what are they going for? What are they trying to do? And this was definitely more subdued, definitely not as over the top as some other Go Home Raws, very sort of by the numbers and straightforward. And I can absolutely understand if people think that that's boring or low key. But I actually a little bit appreciated a little bit of refreshing how they didn't try to do too much and try to oversell and make it seem like the greatest event of all time or something like that.
Well, I feel like they don't feel they need to hype it up for some reason because it doesn't seem like there was an attempt. And the event has always been a week long, but it seems like it's official now that WrestleMania, they kind of tried it last year that it's officially a two-day event, the actual WrestleMania itself. I have a feeling that's a new thing. Like starting last year, they tried it, and I think they're going forward with it, I think. And then they have two Hall of Fame events, one for last year that they couldn't do and one for this year. And there's two NXT shows over two nights. And then there is also, of course, the Monday Night Raw and then the last SmackDown, which is literally the night before WrestleMania. So I think they're just I think if we're going to see anything different, we might see it on SmackDown. But I just felt like this was a normal Raw. It just didn't feel like it had anything special.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's, to me, a little bit of, okay, they're not trying to the hard sell. They're not trying to – maybe it's the pressure is off because it's, they don't have to worry about WWE Network anymore now that it's all exclusively on Peacock. They're still selling that and pushing that, but not nearly as hard as we remember the whole $9.99 and pushing the network as hard as they did the last few years. So maybe that has something to do with it. So yeah, Peacock only for WrestleMania for all the pay-per-views from this point forward. But of course, that's even more watered down than WWE Network. When you talk about like the shows that they put up on Peacock so far and how edited they are and you know, Peacock NBC standards and practices had to go in and scrub, you know, it's going to be a year long process, basically trying to scrub all the, controversial and, sketchy sketches and things that they don't want their, network to be represented by on WWE. So that's been hilarious to go through some of the things so far that they put up on Peacock, and it's like, the ECW, the first ECW pay per view, for example, they put that up on Peacock. So there's all these vile chants at the Dudley Boys and you know, fuck you, Devon, and things like that. But then later on, there's a Chris Candido promo where he talks about Singapore is a pussy country. I'll take a New Jersey cane or something like that. And they had to bleep out pussy. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. So we're gonna allow all these other chants and obscenities and whatnot, but we got to bleep out Singapore as a pussy country. So I don't know exactly how they're going to go about scrubbing and choosing what to edit. And what. There's some things that obviously can never see the light of day on Peacock. I think that's obvious. But so that
they
whole
wrote
thing,
the check and they wrote the check and they really probably didn't look into how, you know, what they bought. They're basically buying fans because you're paying the same price and now you're getting NBC's lineup on top of that. That's a great deal. But at the same time, they're like, oh my, especially if they get into the Attitude Era in ECW, you know, I love how they're going to edit the hell out of it, but they're going to leave RoboCop at WCW's pay-per-view. That'll be left in, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's already up there. Maybe your favorite pay-per-view of all time, Jason, just because of the kitsch of the RoboCop there. It's up there already. Capital Combat 90, The Return of RoboCop.
The other night. I think back in the blog days, I had a whole football recap blog that was based around the return of RoboCop.
Yeah, it's awesome, and it's up there in all its glory. They don't have that many WCW pay-per-views yet, but they put that up there. They're like, oh, there's nothing controversial on this piece of garbage. They just put the whole thing up. There's nothing to scrub there. So, but yeah, that's a new thing going on Peacock. Yeah, you're right, Jerry. NBC just bought the WWE Network and he's bought the subscribers, and they had no idea what they were getting into. I promise you, they had absolutely no idea. How would you think that you're buying a pro wrestling catalog that there's going to be a point where the owner of the wrestling league is referring to one of his white performers by the N-word. Like, why would you think that that would have ever happened? Because there's no reason to think that. There's no, you know, Roger Goodell has never been called, you know, calling one of his players the N-word, or there's no reason to think that something like that would happen, except it's pro wrestling. So maybe you would think that something crazy like that would happen. But yeah, clearly they had no idea some of the stuff that they were getting into when they bought the catalog.
Yeah, it was WNBC years ago that bought Howard Stern's contract without actually listening to his show.
Right.
I guess I'm not that surprised.
It's in their history. Yeah. So yeah, I agree that the Go Home Raw was a little underwhelming, but I actually kind of liked that. It was a little refreshing to me. Yeah, you mentioned the two night spectacular last year. They wore out that hash that promo tag. The WrestleMania that's too big for one night, and I guess this year it's too big for one night as well. I guess it wasn't just the one year. So. Yeah, I think that probably is going to be something that they go ahead and carry over. And I'm definitely happy for that, Jerry, because the alternative is what they have been doing the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, which is this absolutely interminable 7 or 8 hour long Sunday where they got the pre-show and the pre-pre-show and the 2 hour YouTube only pre-show followed by the actual 5 hour show. There is no way that anyone should have to sit through an 8 hour wrestling show. Even if they had the greatest talent in the world, even if this was back in the '80s with Flair and Bockwinkel and Hogan, you just put all the stars on, it's still an 8 hour wrestling show. Nobody should have to suffer that. So if the alternative is to split it up into two nights, I'm all for that. I have no problem at all doing that.
Yeah, I agree. It's for the announcers or the commentary, maybe they can get away with not having to wear dark pants this year. Cause I don't know how I'm 47. There's no way I could hardly sit through the last Avengers movie without having to pee. I have no idea what these guys do. They just must wear dark pants and just go for it.
Maybe when they switch off announcers, when they go from Raw to SmackDown, maybe they all get up and do a Chinese fire drill and run to the back. And I don't know. I don't know how they do that either. So, yeah, we got the old guys once again. We had last year, Bill Goldberg was around. He loses in the empty warehouse to Braun Strowman, and Brock Lesnar loses to Drew McIntyre. And now Lesnar's not there this year, but and Goldberg's not there either, but they found another elderly part-timer to get into the world title picture because Edge has a three-way dance with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns for the Universal title. Thankfully, Jason, you didn't have to read about that. This would have been a real good year to watch Raw for you because you would have never had to put up with a Roman Reigns promo or lack thereof because Roman Reigns is not on Raw anymore. He's over on SmackDown, so you wouldn't have had to sit through that. But that's basically the main event of the last night is they have Roman Reigns as the champ now, and he's going to wrestle a three-way against Daniel Bryan and Edge, who's 47, I think. Again, with the old guys in the part-time roles getting into the main event, I said the same thing when he did it with Goldberg, and I'm saying it now with Edge. That really, to me, makes your guys that are there look bad. Like, you got unbelievably great athletes in their 20s and 30s, not in the main event of WrestleMania, but here's a 47-year-old guy. And not trying to take anything away from Edge, who has done an incredible job of getting himself in shape and working his way back from all of his injuries, which had him forced him to retire a decade ago. And now he's back and he looks fit and he's ready to go and he's hungry and that's great. But that just makes sure your product to me look really bad when that guy is in the main event of WrestleMania and you got other much younger guys that can do more things in the ring than Edge sitting on the sideline. I just think it's a bad look.
Yeah. And I'd almost, and I don't know how things have changed with the perspective that the other guy in this three-way is Daniel Bryan, who, okay, I know he had a, wasn't it just a few years ago that he was not even wrestling?
Yes. He and Edge were both basically forced into retirement.
Yeah, you know, and so I mean, yeah, I'm not caught up on everything, but you know, I see this title. I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at the card, and I see it's, you know, Roman Reigns versus Edge versus Daniel Bryan, and like Roman Reigns is going to win that, right? I mean, he's like healthy.
That's what they want you to think.
Well, and I look at Edge. I think Edge versus Roman Reigns on paper was their version of, I'm exaggerating, but their version of Hulk versus Rock. Old generation versus new, but Edge is no Hulk Hogan. I like Edge. I appreciate all the contributions he's made, but he's no Hulk Hogan. So you're looking at that match, so I'm like, just not doing me. And when I'm looking down the card, and the most excited match I've got is Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair, you know, and no knocking it. I mean, some of the best matches I've seen. Probably one of the top three matches I've ever seen was at an NXT takeover of Bayley versus Sasha Banks. I just watched it again with my wife last night, and she was just like, she forgot how good that match was. And it was built up, great storytelling, and it wasn't even on WrestleMania. When I'm excited about the SmackDown Women's Championship match, don't want to put down the women. They've been impressive for the last several years since they've let them get past pulling hair and bra and panties matches.
And Slobo.
Oh, I'm out.
Yep, you just lost Jason.
I'm going to guess those are going to get scrubbed from the Peacock too, right?
If you do, what's you're not going to have
what's
much
left.
That's
what I mean.
God.
Well, you know, we're in the Me Too era, right? I mean, there's so much. I mean, if we're going to go back and scrub, you know, the things that we are scrubbing, we got to go back and scrub about three decades worth of wrestling, don't we?
Yeah, that's kind of the fear that there's, you're not going to really be able to put much up on the network if you're going to scrub all the content that you deem questionable and objectionable.
You'll only be able to watch it on your dusty old videotapes, you know, under a blanket.
Everybody go dust off their VCRs if they still work, and that's the only way you can enjoy the realness of ECW and the Attitude Era. But yeah, your point, Jerry, is that the lack of building stars, the lack of building guys to go into that main event slot that are young and hungry, and but they can do that with the women's slot. I don't know if that's something that, because they don't quite care as much about the women's slots, that they can go ahead and try Rhea Ripley in one main event and Bianca Belair in another, and they're both in their mid-20s. I think that's what it is that they feel so afraid of trying new guys in the male spots, because that's where they think their all the money is, and that's where they think all the importance should go, that they're going to go to the old guys because, hey, we know who they are. At least we know that they can produce what we want them to produce in the ring, at least, you know, to a certain extent. Yeah, I think it's just fear of not wanting to put a new guy up there and have him bomb out. But they don't have that fear with the women's division because I don't think they care quite as much. But as a result, you do have newer talent getting a shot. You do have Bianca Belair, who's an unbelievable athlete, and Rhea Ripley on the Raw side. So, yeah, well, I don't know what the plan is. That's what I'm kind of getting to with the men's division is. Where are they going? What's the plan? Because it's not going to be John Cena. He's not around anymore. It's not going to be any of these younger guys anytime soon, because they don't have any of them positioned to be like the next guy, with the exception of Matt Riddle, but even he has his out of the ring issues as well. So I don't know, John. I don't know what the plan is. I don't know what they're trying to do going forward.
Yeah, I'm looking at over the card, like even the Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, which we've seen before, but now he's kind of the Friday the 13th. Part six, Jason, and what I worry about is, I don't know what you guys thought about. I mean, when I saw WrestleMania last year where they did like a couple of matches that were, this will be new for Jason, but they were cinematic.
Yeah.
And there when it's an idea they definitely got from Matt Hardy with the broken Matt Hardy gimmick and everything. But you know, they were entertaining for that, but it was very hard to watch as like being taken seriously. And I'm worried they're going to do this with the Randy Orton Fiend match. They haven't announced anything special, but I worry they're going to do something, you know, I don't know. It gets a little, I've always been that way with The Undertaker. I love The Undertaker, but like when he's having lightning get struck, I'm like, oh, I've always been kind of like a little cringy.
That'll certainly take you out of the mindset of trying to believe and trying to go along with everything like it's based in reality. That'll take you right out. Yeah, last year, Jason, they had the empty warehouse, so they were able to have some matches where they weren't live. They basically filmed them like they were movies, so they were able to cut and edit and. But they took that too far because that Edge Randy Orton match wound up being like 45 minutes once they were through cutting and editing and doing all the things where, you know, instead of just in the middle of a wrestling match and the normal things that happens, now you have, you know, 2 and 3 minute sequences where the guy's stalking the other guy and now I'm going to get you. And it's looking like, you know, Halloween, Friday the 13th type thing. And yeah, that's not, they can do that maybe once or twice, but if it's going to be every WrestleMania where they have a cinematic match, I don't think that's going to go over very well when they finally get to have people back in the audience like they are this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, because my understanding, and I just obviously found out about that today, is that, yeah, there are going to be fans, so they're not going to be wrestling in an empty warehouse or in front of video monitors.
Right.
So I think that changes it some, you know, and I think that maybe adds back even to what would be looked at as I'm looking at this card and I'm like, skip, what do I, there's nothing I would need to see in one night, much less two. just looking at it, because like I said, it's basically just the same names, just, you know, let's just pinball all these guys around and see who's going to fight. And then I scroll down to the end of day one and I see it's going to, the Shane McMahon gets a match. I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Steel cage. So it's going to be a big bump and Braun Strowman's going to win.
Yeah. Pretty much. He'll throw him off the top of the cage through a table and.
And nothing to see there. But you know,
as long as you don't slap your damn leg, we're going to be okay.
Everything is fine. Nope. So long as you don't slap.
No leg slapping.
So yeah, I think though having the element of fans back will help these guys. It's got to.
And there's a couple of things that they did, Jason, in the build up this year to the some of these matches that I don't think they could have possibly done if they had fans there the entire time. One thing is definitely that they, you probably could tell by the match when you see it on paper, you know, Edge and Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. But Roman Reigns is the bad guy now. They turned him heel finally.
Oh, wait a minute. We've only been saying that on this show for five years.
Yes, exactly. So many people wanted to finally see, you know, the badass Roman Reigns come out. So they could not, I don't think they could have possibly done that in front of fans because everyone will be cheering him now because he's the badass. That's what they wanted to see. They were booing him. They weren't booing him because they didn't like him.
Right.
They were booing him because he was getting shoved down everyone's fucking throats as a good guy and nobody was buying that shit. So they were able to do
interesting
that.
Interesting to see how things play out after this is, are they dipping their toe in the water with a live crowd to see the wrestlers, I believe are all kind of like they're all at their minimum guarantees because there's no live events. Unless they're doing side jobs and movies and stuff, there's no gate attendance that they're getting paid from for the last year. They're basically, I don't know if Jason's aware, but earlier this year when they started the Thunderdome, which you saw tonight where it's a bunch of monitors, they rented, they rented an arena for 3 months. And they got a great deal because who else is going to use the arena for 3 months? And the wrestlers didn't have to travel. So another thing for this year and next year is if they start traveling again, some of these wrestlers have gotten kind of spoiled where they didn't have to travel as much, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out with some, because some of them get burnt out with travel, and to go from no travel to you're back, 46 weeks a year. I mean, they're
right.
Gone
all over
so
the country,
much.
Sometimes out of the country.
It'll be interesting to see the long-term effect of going back to normal slowly is that travel that is brutal on the wrestlers. Now, this might also re-energize them. It could go the other way for some where they're ready to go and they're full of energy and they can't wait to get back to this. But some of them might realize, like Brock Lesnar did years ago, is this travel thing isn't my gig.
Right. You get enough money, we go, I don't need this shit. The hell with
yeah.
It.
Yeah. And for a while there, he just seemed to be very selective about when he would even show up. Like, they would just wheel him out around the big times, it seemed like. So, you know, he was just became like an event wrestler, basically.
Exactly. Everyone else is
yeah,
going around.
The thing now is, yeah, do we have anybody currently on the roster that is considered like the special event person? I think maybe Shane McMahon. That's about it. I don't know if we have anybody else on the roster that they wheel out a couple times a year. Undertaker's done. Nothing with John Cena being that person now. I don't know. That is another one where there were these special attractions that would come out every, a few times a year, and that is kind of even starting to go to the wayside.
I think that is something that they have to let go for the time being because of the travel restrictions and because they don't want too many coronavirus risks. They don't want to bring too many outside people in. But yeah, I think Edge is the guy right now serving that role. I don't know how long he wants to do that or be that guy. I have a feeling he's winning the damn title. So he's going to be around for a little longer. I think they want that feel good story to keep going. But yeah, I think that's what they're basically going with is, they don't have Undertaker anymore, but that just stopped. Like, they had him last year again for a cinematic deal, and it was against AJ Styles, and that was again, all those cinematic movies are a little hard to watch because again your realism is it's already being strained because you're watching professional wrestling, and then you add the cinematic part to it, and it's like basically you're watching Friday the 13th, and then I don't know how many people can really get into that. I see a familiar number come up on the caller ID, so we're going to have a guest call in. Caller, you're on the air. Welcome into our WrestleMania preview.
Oh, I'm just listening, my man. How's it going?
Hi, it's my Uncle Dwayne, my father figure, my favorite guy. Yeah, if you have a comment or anything, you can absolutely let me know. But if you're just listening in, I can definitely put you back on mute.
No, actually, this is pretty cool. I didn't know you were covering WrestleMania. I'm a little excited, like you say, because of the fact that with the pandemic, things were so different last year. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's going on. Plus, with the WWE Network pushing everything over to Peacock, I want to see how that works. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to talk about that on the air, but at any rate.
We mentioned it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but I'm seeing how that goes. But anyway, just wanted to show my support. And I happened to see you were discussing WWE. You know, I had to check into that. And I'm sitting here in Vegas right now about to hit the casino, but I'm like, let me call in and check out my man.
All right. Hey, throw down some blackjack bets for me. I appreciate the support, and always good to hear from you.
Always, my dude, always. Love you.
All right. Love you, Unc. Put you back on mute. Yeah, he's definitely know he was out in Vegas because I saw him posting about that, and he's getting his blackjack therapy in. So hope to join him sometime in the near future, maybe. We'll see how that works out. But where was I going on this? The cinematic matches, and we were talking about the who's around that's sort of the special attraction now. I think really Edge is the only guy playing that role. Maybe there'll be more guys, next year once the travel restrictions are lightened up a little bit. They're bringing in Hulk Hogan to be a host. He can't wrestle anymore because his back is completely shot. I'm sure if he could, they would do that. And I'm sure if The Rock was available, that they would have him every year in some capacity. But it, you know, he's got such a busy schedule actually being a successful actor. And I still think, Jerry, that that's probably the one match that they're holding on to that they really want to do is the, when you talk about old versus new generation, I think they really want to do Roman Reigns and The Rock coming in to sort of teach his cousin a lesson someday. I still think they're going to do that down the road.
Oh, I agree. That could be a year or two away. The Rock's not dumb either. I mean, just looking at, you know, I don't know if you've watched The Young Rock. I think that's entertaining. He's got various products of alcohol. He's got the Zoa energy drink. He's got a lot going on, and he now is an owner of the XFL. Him and his business partner Danny Garcia, very successful, and you know, he's no dummy to wait for the opportunity. But in a year or two, they could sell out Texas Stadium again, which I think they're back next year, back to the AT&T Stadium. That would be a huge payday, and it would definitely christen Roman Reigns. It'll be interesting to see how that goes down, because it'll be almost impossible to make The Rock a heel.
Hmm. You think so? I don't know.
This is the XFL.
That hopefully will be different than Vince McMahon's version. No cameras in the locker room or anything like that. I don't know. I think Rock is such a the fact of him dropping in, and John Cena referred to that in some of their promos, that I think there would be some booing. I think there would be a little bit of a split for that match, but I think the only way to get there is to have Reigns starting out as the heel. I think to try to bring Rock in when they were still trying to force Reigns as the babyface, I think that would have been way too awkward. But I think this is the right road, is to have Reigns try to be the tribal chief and Rock eventually come in and try to set him straight.
I may have misspoke. I meant to say The Rock. It'd be impossible to make him a heel. I may have said Roman Reigns. But when they tried to kind of do the handoff at the Royal Rumble a couple of years ago, where The Rock showed up at the end and raised his hand, and the crowd just he was almost trying to give a rub, and the crowd just rejected it. And it would have to be the same. It'd be impossible to have The Rock be a heel and have people cheer for Reigns. They'll try, but the Hulk Hogan Rock situation was different because the crowd did flip at the end, and I just don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, that was a once in a lifetime thing where the everyone is so heavy for Hogan because it's Toronto, and that's a big spot for him, and they turned on Rock early on, but yeah, they were able to. I think that's just two master wrestlers and feeling the crowd out and making that switch. I don't even think the Hall and Nash were supposed to run out and attack Hogan at the end of that, but I think that was sort of an audible because they could feel that moment that they need to go out and make sure that this happens, where we give Rock a chance to be the hero and give Hogan a chance to sort of pass the torch to Rock. And they were able to pull that off. But yeah, that's definitely something, Jason, that I don't think they could have done with fans in the crowd, is turn Roman Reigns heel, because I think fans would have definitely cheered for that. And two, you mentioned the Shane McMahon thing, and the way they set that match up, Jason, you are so lucky you didn't have to witness the way they decided to set that up. Basically, they had a segment where Shane McMahon came out and stalled and hemmed and hawed for an extended segment, like for like 5 minutes, where he was just trying to – he was acting like he was trying to find the words to tell Braun Strowman. And in the end, he just said, "Braun, I just think you're stupid." And that's it. That's how the feud began. And it's like, what?
Okay.
What are we doing? That would have been so awful in front of a live crowd. They would have booed that to death, and WWE unfortunately would have taken that and tried to paint it as if they hate Shane McMahon so much that that's why they were booing, and try to put trying to put the heat on Shane. And in reality, it's just, no, the segment just sucked. And the whole premise of the feud just sucks. And it still sucks, but it's in front of nobody. So there's no risk. You can do something like that. But they couldn't have done that in front of live people.
Well, you know, you gotta try to keep something that's basically the same thing over and over and over again creative, right? You're trying to basically sell the same premise every year, but 37 times now, premise of WrestleMania, and this, like we talk about, this reshuffling of the deck, you're gonna have some clunkers.
Yeah, but everything Shane McMahon does is a clunker. He shouldn't be in there. He just should not be in the ring. And he wouldn't if he wasn't a McMahon, but that's a whole other story.
Correct. Well, the old man would still be wrestling if he could. Jesus.
Oh, you know he would. Oh, if Vince could strut out there and play No Chance in Hell, he would be right there at the top of the card. Yes, that's for damn sure.
You know, and going to Vince, you know, with his age and everything, I also look at the whole sale to Peacock, and I'm wondering, like, is this company for sale within the next 5 years? Are we going to, you know, this thing is a moneymaker to where they're not going to just stop things. I guess it could go one of two ways. If there's a buyer and they decide to go in a different direction, it could be good for all of us. It could go the other way. I guess you just don't know. But it's something I've been reading about and starting to think about, reading some of the shareholder information. I know there's a class action lawsuit. I own a whopping 2 shares right now of WWE stock. And there is a class action lawsuit right now that they're involved with overstating their earnings.
Mm-mm. That's a no-no. That's no good.
Well, as long as they don't sell to Disney.
Oh, then everything gets wiped.
Because Disney buys everything now.
That's true. But if they bought WWE, you'd never have anything left on the network.
Oh, just imagine the shameless cross promotions that you could have. If you know.
If they have a musical number, I'm out. But Sasha Banks could be a Disney princess all day, every day, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, she's already on a Disney show, so,
there you go.
It's perfect.
And Intercontinental Champion Mickey Mouse, I can see it now.
And they can do the simulcast, or they could do like the simulcast thing like the NFL did with Nickelodeon, right, where you could have the...
Oh, geez.
You know, the slime effects, you know.
Yeah. It's all coming true in my head right now, and I don't like it. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years down the road when we're doing this show and Disney owns the WWE and we have, like the Disney princess match, just watch out.
You called it. You're on record. My uncle texted me to chime in.
The biggest stinker of the whole thing is, I almost feel bad for The Miz. They kind of said, we're going to let you have the title for a couple days, and then we're going to strip it front. We're going to have you lose, right? And we're going to have you get blown out. And then we're going to mix you up with Bad Bunny.
Yeah, the very odd booking to have Bobby Lashley help out The Miz and help him win the title from Drew McIntyre. So the whole Money in the Bank cashing in thing that you definitely nailed several years ago, Jason, with Seth Rollins. That's not an option this year because Miz already cashed in Money in the Bank to beat Drew McIntyre a couple months ago. But then he had Bobby Lashley beat up Drew McIntyre to help him do that, right? But to do that, he promised Bobby Lashley a title shot in exchange for that help. So then, like, the next week or 2 weeks later, Bobby Lashley got his title shot against The Miz and beat the piss out of him and won the title. And so that was odd to have Lashley do that. And you know what? To beat up The Miz like that in a dominating fashion where you're not cheating at all and win the title, that should have made Bobby Lashley a babyface. But since it's all a setup for Drew McIntyre to come back and be the conquering hero and win the title at WrestleMania like he did last year, they had to find a way to turn Bobby Lashley back heel again. So they had him set up where he's got a bounty on Drew McIntyre's head, and he's playing a coward heel, and he's backing away and running away. But at the same time, he's beating up his own teammates, and he broke up his own posse because they didn't get the job done trying to beat up McIntyre before. So it's all sort of convoluted to try to make it a straight babyface heel dynamic by the time you get to WrestleMania. But it's really not, because there's kind of no reason to boo Bobby Lashley. He's just a walking badass, right? So I think Lashley would have had more than a few cheers for this match and for this entire feud if this was taking place. And that's another thing, taking place in front of people that would have been different, that I think Lashley, I don't think he would have been completely the babyface with Drew McIntyre being the heel, but there's definitely some elements of, hey, McIntyre, you're doing a lot of whining and complaining, just kind of, you know, you can shut up for a while. And Lashley just kind of doing what he does. Like I said, I don't think there's any reason really to boo him, because he's just a big muscle-bound badass who beats up everybody.
Yeah, I personally like Bobby Lashley and MVP with him. Their stable was decent. It was weird that they broke it up. Usually you think they'd break it up after he lost the title, where he'd blame them and they would, it would you know, could change the dynamic of things. But, you know, I can't tell if they're just keeping us guessing or if they really are just shuffling the deck constantly the last few weeks. It's hard to tell what's really, again, they're, like you had said earlier, there's no crowd, so they're just kind of going with it.
Yeah, they're kind of throwing everything up in the air and seeing what sticks.
So they're doing this over two nights. Are they doing this two nights live? Is this going to be both nights? Okay, so wow. You know, and you have to wonder, you know, with people not having anything really live and in person now, like this is the first live WrestleMania, in 2 years now, and you've had a whole year without any fans. Like, do you expect this crowd to be jacked? Do you expect this crowd to be hostile?
I'd expect them to be jacked. I expect them to be, because think about the true diehards that get a chance to come into WrestleMania after a year of not being able to get in there. These are probably going to be the people that love everything WWE puts out. They're not going to have much resistance to when WWE presents something that they want you to cheer, like the Bad Bunny thing. I think Bad Bunny in front of a whole house of hardcore fans would get a lot of boos because he's an outsider coming. He's a rapper. He's not a wrestler. He's some guy walking in off the street that's got, you know, platinum albums and whatnot, but he's no actual wrestler. So he would get a fair amount of backlash. But these guys that are paying to get into WrestleMania, they've got the money to do that, because you're not going to have people walking in for, you know, $15, $20 off the street. This is going to be something where either you got, you know, hundreds of dollars to get in there, or you can't get in, because there's a limited amount of people that they're going to be letting in. It's not going to be the Raymond James Stadium. So these are the, you know, the hardcores. They've got the disposable income. They're pretty much going to go for, you know, 95% of whatever WWE does, whichever direction WWE wants to lead them by the nose, they're going to go for that. So I think they're going to be excited. I think sort of follow the cues that WWE gives them, and they're gonna go with whatever WWE wants them to go for. There's gonna be things that Bad Bunny does against The Miz that you're supposed to cheer. You can tell the moments that Miz acts like a coward and a chicken shit, and Bad Bunny stands up like he's a tough guy, that you're supposed to go, oh yeah, Bad Bunny, he's the man. And I think in front of most crowds, they would be like, no, we're not buying this. This is BS. But in front of these people, they're going to be like, yeah, Bad Bunny. Go Bad Bunny. Yeah.
All right.
You know, it's interesting because they're in an open stadium with only a fraction of the crowd, and the sound would travel up. I hope they try to find a way to mic the crowd to get that sound, because – open stadiums already have that struggle where you don't get the sound doesn't carry because there's no dome, so it doesn't go anywhere. But so you get a smaller crowd on top of this. I'm assuming that they're going to put them all on the hard side camera. Would you say?
Yeah, if not all, then probably, yeah, 80% of them, yeah.
They're going to do the world-class wrestling at Texas Stadium where they only fill, like, one part of the horseshoe. But, but if they're – I mean, for all the technology they've done, if they can find a way to mic the crowd where it doesn't seem too crazy, I think it would really help the event.
Jerry, I think that they're over the Rubicon. They've had a whole year of being able to put whatever sound effects they want, which they've done before, we know. But now there's no backlash. There's no reason to try to pretend like they're doing anything else. So, yeah, I think they're just going to make it sound better than it to sound, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's other – they can pump in crowd noise. It's not like this is, you know, sports and you're going to get in trouble for that.
No, they're going to make it sound exactly. Bad Bunny's going to have nobody booing him. There's going to be zero boos for Bad Bunny. There's going to be zero boos for Drew McIntyre. There's going to be zero cheers for Bobby Lashley. They're going to do it exactly how they want to do it because they've got that advantage now that they, well, we didn't have any people, so we had to juice the sound and make it sound the way we want to. And I think from this point forward, they're going to basically sweeten all their sound if they haven't been doing it already, because there's no reason not to now. They got away with it for a year because they had the excuse of, well, there's no people. We got to make it sound good. And now that there's going to be people, I think they're going to make it sound the way they want it to sound anyway, you know, to an extent. Like if you go to Philadelphia with this crap, like you were talking about with The Rock and Roman Reigns, trying to give them the rub. They did that in the wrong damn city. They did that in Philly, and Philly crapped all over them. So it's going to be you can't make that sound good. You know, you can't have everyone clearly booing and throwing trash in a ring and then have it where it sounds like everyone's cheering them. You can't do that. But I think they're going to do something as close to that as possible when it's, you know, ambivalent like it's going to be on Sunday. It's just people, just a bunch of people that are happy to be there. They're going to make them sound however they want them to sound.
So is
yeah,
this
those fans
be...
are going to be just happy that they have a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to be two, like, three-hour cards or 2 hours?
Yeah,
or...
three or four. Yeah, yeah, about 3.5 hours each night. Yeah, something like that.
So have they eliminated the – so by doing this over two nights, and are they eliminating what used to be the sort of the prelim matches – that would run up to
some of
the
prelim matches are going to be some of the prelim matches are going to be on SmackDown. The Andre the Giant Battle Royal is going to be on SmackDown.
Oh,
so they're
okay.
Almost treating SmackDown as the go home.
Ah,
whereas
that's
the pre-show I've noticed.
Yeah,
and
that's
great.
I could remember on a few of the shows in years past that both you and Jerry were like more excited about the run up matches to WrestleMania than you were about the actual WrestleMania card. So I was curious if they have sort of incorporated a lot more of that because they're spreading it out over two nights or you know, what they were doing with that. So that sort of answers the question that they're putting some of that now on SmackDown. And don't they tape SmackDown the same night as Raw?
No, not anymore.
They don't do that
now?
Is that live
they're
now?
Two separate live events, yeah.
Okay.
SmackDown's the one on Fox. That's the network show.
Right.
So they definitely do that live
and
let them get the big show for themselves because that's the big network show now. So, but yeah, it's still a situation where they're getting pretty much as much of the roster as possible involved in WrestleMania in some way, shape or form, just so that everyone can have a WrestleMania payday, which is completely fine. I understand that. But like I said, when they were trying to put it all on one day, it resulted in basically an 8 or 9 hour day of wrestling. And that is just nobody should have to sit through that. Even wrestling, longtime, lifelong wrestling fans like me and Jerry don't want to sit through that for the love of God. So, yeah, thankfully they're spreading it out and making sure that and doing it with NXT makes even more sense because there's more wrestling talent. There's better wrestlers in general in NXT. So to make their show always one night and only 4 or 5 matches, they would always leave a whole lot of talent sitting off to the side. And to now make that two nights as well is actually, to me, even better because there's a lot of people that are going to be performing on NXT night one and night two that you really want to see their matches because they're really If WWE was doing things the way they should be, these really are the guys that are going to be moving up and being at the top of the card in, you know, the next 5 or 10 years. But it just seems like they don't want to – they take so many of those guys from NXT, Jerry, and they promote them and call them up, and almost instantly they lose whatever special ability that they had in NXT. There's so many. The list is so long. Keith Lee doesn't seem special anymore. Aleister Black didn't seem special once they brought him up anymore. Ricochet completely lost what he had. Bobby Roode lost whatever little bit that he had. Andrade, he's fired now. He's not fired, he quit. But there's so many guys that when they finally get the call-up from NXT, it's like they forget what made them good in NXT, and then they turn it into nothing.
You know, with Andrade, I thought I just mentioned, you know, being, I don't know if he's engaged or married to Charlotte Flair, but – boy, the comments he's making, I mean, he is digging a hole for a significant other. I mean, comments about apparently somebody in the dressing room was taking pictures of her while she was changing, comments about she was pulled from WrestleMania because there was a pregnancy scare, all this stuff that I can bet you WWE didn't want anybody to know about that, and he's just lobbing grenades. And it's like, you know, your wife still works there, right? Like, what are you doing? It's crazy.
But that might be the one person that can have their husband spilling all the tea and talking all the crap, because it's Ric Flair's daughter. You're not going to really do anything to her, because if they get rid of her or have a problem with her, she's going to turn around and really tell all the secrets. She really knows where all the bodies are buried.
Yeah, and AEW is a very good product, and they would just be chomping at the bit.
They'd be all over that, no question. Yeah, there's another really strange feud that we talked on a little bit earlier with the whole Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton thing. Now, Jason, this is definitely right up your alley when you talk about kitschy and really out there and outlandish. They had a feud already that was a little weird, where Bray Wyatt is this character, the Fiend, and you can't beat the Fiend. When when he turns into the Fiend, he's untouchable. It's almost, you know, almost like The Undertaker with his magical spirits, a little bit of that going on.
Right.
So Randy Orton found a way to beat the Fiend several months ago. He took a can of gasoline and set him on fire. He literally set the body on fire. Again, this is not in front of people, so you can have the deal where you pull off a stunt where it's clear that they had him roll out the ring and roll in a dummy and had them set that on fire. And it's very,
you know,
very
it's a hell
obvious.
Of a finisher. It's a hell of a finisher.
It's an all-time finisher. You can't get up from that, right? But instead of...
That's right. It's not the RKO anymore. He just immolates people.
Exactly. You can't touch that. But instead of ending the feud there, the Fiend is now back, and he's just got a crispy burnt mask and an outfit. And he came back from hell or wherever, and now he's really indestructible now. You thought he was indestructible before. He is really indestructible. And so is he the good guy? He rose from the guy trying to burn him? So that, I guess that makes him the good guy. Oh, by the way, he's got Alexa Bliss as his sort of accomplice or girlfriend or whatever. And how did that happen? He assaulted her. He stuck his fingers down her throat. And for some reason, she slowly turned to his side because she couldn't resist the allure or something like that. So basically, he assaulted the woman and she became his girlfriend or something. The whole thing is yuck. And it just... Every time I see the Fiend, my stomach turns. Like, I don't want anything
with
that guy.
At one point, she was a ghost. She was a ghost. it was just as bad as watching Marlena on Days of Our Lives be possessed by the devil. I swear to God. It's just like, are we really going there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a match.
Talented. Super talented.
Yeah.
And to have it where, like, okay, this is where we're going to go with this. And Randy Orton, it's like, you know, he's going along with this as being like, I better get a big payday for this.
Right. He's just like,
just
I'm
getting
paid. It
doesn't seem
like
his cup of tea. Yeah.
Yeah. Alexa, poor girl, she can't wrestle for more than a month or two without getting concussed. So I understand that they got to, you know, be careful with her and maybe keep her out of the ring. But this whole thing is just... this might be indeed the cinematic match, because what do you do? Where do you go for? I guess this is what the allure is to that match is the guy got burned alive and he's back. What now? What's next? What does he do to Randy Orton?
Peacock's fine with that.
But, I guess I don't know. As long as he doesn't call her a pussy or something, you know, that's it. That's the magic place that we got to edit things out. But everything else is fine. So what's going to happen at WrestleMania now that the guy's come back from being burned alive? What's he going to do to Randy Orton? He's going to chop his head off? What can you do? What's the next step?
Why are you giving them ideas? What are you doing?
I'm sorry.
If I go to a live event this year and there's a floating head in the ring, I'm out. I'm out. I'm going to Chuck E. Cheese and it's over.
Or just AEW, just exclusively AEW or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, that's another point, though, is, you know, one of the biggest things being talked about right now, it's WrestleMania week, is Chris Jericho going to be on the Broken Skull podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like your big talking thing, and everybody's like, I can't believe Vince approved that. I'm like, well, yeah, it's going to get people to listen. And also, I'm sure he's going to have some things he can't say. And it's going to get ears. I think it's actually on Peacock, and I think it's also on a podcast. So it'll be, I guess it is what it is.
Well, it's Jericho, so it's the one guy I think that's in AEW now that I think Vince McMahon trusts won't go on Steve Austin's show and completely bury WWE, right? Like, there's about the only guy that he could have come on there because he knows how appreciative Jericho is for the career that he had in WWE while being that risk-taker guy that went to AEW. So I think that's the only guy that Vince would trust to do something like that. I think everyone else, you know, when you talk about Big Show or Christian or Cody, I think they all have so many access to bury with WWE that there's no way Vince McMahon would allow that. I think Jericho's the only one that he would let do something like that. I think that's just a matter of trusting the guy that he knows that – he knows Jericho will go right up to the line, but Jericho knows not to go over the line and bury WWE.
Yeah, there'll be some under the radar, little tongue-in-cheek to keep people like us happy, and that's about as far as it'll go.
Yeah, I'm not even I probably won't even listen to that because I know that Jericho won't go over the line, and he won't really go where a lot of us want him to go and really just, you know, tell all the secrets about WWE. Like Moxley will never be on Steve Austin's show or any WWE programming because they know better.
Well, yeah, after what CM Punk did, he's blew up the internet when he had his show with his buddy, his former buddy's podcast.
Right.
And that ended up into a lawsuit. It was mm-hmm. so bad.
Yeah, so they know the guys that they can trust in that respect, and they know who not to trust. So we talked briefly about both women's title matches that are setups for the younger ladies to take over and win their first titles, not counting NXT because Rhea Ripley won the NXT title. But I think Rhea Ripley is – I don't know if you think different, Jerry. I think Rhea Ripley's going to knock off Asuka for the Raw title after – Rhea had the job to Charlotte last year for the NXT title. I think they're going to give Ripley the Raw title and have her sort of start taking off. And I think Bianca Belair is going to beat Sasha Banks for the SmackDown title and start her ascent.
It's tough. I don't know if they'll flip both of them, but that does make perfect sense. But is there a way that one of them could lose and still come out when Stone Cold lost to Bret Hart, and all of a sudden, they did a double turn there and everything, but the idea that his popularity went through the roof when his toughness, he fell a little short. I think one of them could lose, but if they put on a hell of a match, you know, the crowd they're going to have, even if they lost, they could, you know, it would, I don't think it would hurt them.
Right, they're definitely going to give him a standing O or whatever at the end, either way. I think that's possible with Bianca because she's still so young that they don't – I mean, they're both young, but Bianca, I think they could have Sasha Banks go over and they can go, you know, 15, 20 minutes and actually show what athletically Bianca is capable of while still keeping the belt on Sasha Banks. I just don't think they will, because they've shown no inclination in the past to respect Sasha Banks and keep the title on her. Doesn't she lose the title like every single time she wins it? She's like a lifetime champion in the first four title reigns. She lost the very first defense. So that's why I think it's perfect to set up for Bianca to beat her, because they have no problem beating Sasha. I think they've proven that in the past.
Yeah, and she puts on, you know, it's like, it's no different than Ric Flair. I mean, he'll talk about being a 16-time champ, but he lost 16 times.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm not knocking Ric Flair, he's my favorite. But with Sasha, I love her as a heel. I've watched her from the beginning, and to see her come to where she is, and, you know, part of me has always been hoping that they could do a redo of Bailey and her, but they just never seemed to get around to it. And when they did have some heat, they kind of was in Survivor Series mode, and it around October, November, and it was like, they're not going to do it, because they usually would set that up around Royal Rumble or after. And now, you know, there's one more pay-per-view after Royal Rumble, or there's two more pay-per-views after Royal Rumble now. And you almost have to get things started at Elimination Chamber or Fastlane to get there now. But Sasha Banks is, you know, I guess the little bit of a chauvinist in me, the little bit that's left, I worry about them getting hurt. Because when you see them go full go versus what they used to do, the divas back in the day, you know, now you see some of the stuff they do, and it stops my heart, because I'm like, you know, I'm being chauvinistic, because I don't care if these guys get hurt, but like if one of these girls get hurt. I get all bent out of shape. I'm like, you know, that's not very fair, Jerry. There's some stuff that Sasha's done where I'm like, she had to hurt herself. And Bianca is a hell of a talent. I'm sure there's a lot of trust there. And I think they're going to put on a damn clinic, and I don't think they're going to give them 30 minutes, but I hope they give them 30 minutes.
Yeah, they're probably not giving them 30, but they're going to get more than a normal SmackDown. They're going to get more than the 10. They're going to get 15 or 20, I think. I have a lot of confidence they're going to put on a real good match, too, because Sasha's done it all. She's got all the experience, and whatever Bianca doesn't have in experience, she's just got such natural athleticism. Like, she just wakes up, and she's a world-class track and field athlete. She won championships at Tennessee. She's no slouch at all. She's about as good as it gets as far as female athletes go. So I think they've built her up, very nicely. They haven't gone too far, but now they've got her in the right spot to put her right over the top. And I think they're going to do it, but I can see where they give it a little bit more and let it seem like, oh, she's a young gun and she's this close, but she just couldn't come through her first title shot. But she's right there, and she's going to, you know, be the person that you look forward to in the future. And I don't know why it's so difficult to do that with the men. It should not be that hard to take any one of those guys that I just mentioned that were so great in NXT, or even someone that wasn't in NXT, and just build them up like that. Just have them beat the veterans and build themselves. So it's what they did all these years past in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. I don't know why they can't do that now. It just seems like they try to build someone and they quit and they say, oh, he's no good, to throw him away and call one of these 47-year-olds and call them up and have them come back and give them the title again. I'm over that.
Yeah, when they brought Goldberg back last year, it was again where I was like, all right, he's going to steamroll again. It's hard to, part of it's because you can't carry a long match, and I get it. It's that nostalgia factor and everything. Like if Hulk Hogan was able to get in the ring, you're going to get the same three. You're going to get three moves out of him. You're lucky if you get a leg drop, and the crowd's going to eat it up. And I'll admit that. Mm-hmm. I'll eat it up of that nostalgia. Do you remember back in the day when they brought back two wrestlers? One of them was missing a leg, and Jerry Lawler pulled his leg off. What was his name?
Oh, God. Pewter, right?
But Vachon? No, this was like the butcher Vachon and some other guy. They just brought back these old wrestlers. Not even really,
the old
just
guys.
To get in the
okay.
ring. Yeah, there were some real old guys. And it was, you know, it was like they're brought back. I didn't even know one of them was alive still, I guess, is how bad it was. But, when they brought those guys back, it wasn't like this kind of, they were going to, Jerry Lawler being a commentator, they're going to knock his lights out and embarrass him. Ha ha. Okay, great. Cool. Move on. But they're not going to put these guys in like this top spot or something where they're going to like beat the champion.
Right. There's no way they would send, 50-year-old Dick the Bruiser out there and have them go over Hulk Hogan or something. There's just no way they would do that. But that's what we got now, unfortunately. We got this cycle with starting with Brock Lesnar, and The Rock was part of that as well. He dropped in and had a title reign, and you understood that because they built the WrestleMania in Miami around it and made a shit ton of money. I get it, but all these other guys at Edge and Goldberg, and I loved Goldberg when he was doing his thing in WCW, but good God, that was 20 years ago. More than 20 years ago. Yeah, I don't know why they can't build young guys right now. I really don't. So, Jace, did you see anything else on the in the reviews of Raw on Twitter, on wrestling Twitter, that stood out to you?
Nothing that hasn't been discussed tonight. So,
yeah,
I think you guys pretty well, mirrored what I was seeing, with a lot more depth than 150 or 160 or whatever number of characters it is that you can get on there. But it was definitely fun to scroll through there tonight and sort of get it that way and go, this is pretty much what I expected it would be.
Well, there's another one where they did just like the Brock Lesnar constantly looking like a fool leading up to the Undertaker match, which he wound up winning, and that's how I called that one. They've got another one going for you to watch out for when WrestleMania comes up this weekend, the Raw Tag Team title match. They've had they got this big black guy, big Nigerian named Omos, I think is what they call him. He's never wrestled before. He's never actually had a pro wrestling match at all. And he's going to tag with AJ Styles, who's a longtime veteran, and they're going to challenge the New Day for the Raw Tag Team titles. They've been embarrassing AJ Styles repeatedly. They've had New Day beat AJ Styles in all these tag matches and singles matches for the last 3 or 4 weeks or whatever. So obviously this new guy, Omos, and AJ Styles are going to win the Raw Tag Team titles coming up at WrestleMania because they kept having them get embarrassed by the New Day over and over again. And it's so obvious. I don't know what the attraction for that match is besides watching this Omos guy and seeing if he can work at all, because he's never wrestled before. So that's basically, he's a 7-foot Nigerian guy. That's basically why he's getting a push, is because he's a 7-foot Nigerian. Can he wrestle at all? Maybe not, but he's big. And
They're going to do very similar to Ted DiBiase, Andre the Giant. He's going to get in the ring, overpower, and then AJ's going to be the Ted DiBiase role of work, being the working guy in the bunch, and then tag out for that guy to clean house a little bit, and then but AJ is going to do all the heavy lifting, which that's the way you kind of want it.
Yeah, but that's almost a too perfect analogy, Jerry, because Andre the Giant at that stage couldn't work at all. He was just awful. He was broken down. He was basically about to die in a few years and didn't know it. But and that's exactly what almost sort of reminds me of, because if you're wondering, can he work? Can he wrestle? What's his coordination? Well, if you notice tonight on Raw, walking up the steps just to get into the ring, he tripped. He stumbled. So I think that's a perfect example of what you're going to see, that AJ's going to have to be the guy with the working shoes on, and then they're going to tag the big guy in. He's going to do like two or three power moves, and hopefully he doesn't fall and break something while doing those two or three moves.
Well,
worse yet, hurt somebody.
Yes.
My observation of it, unfortunately, over the last few years seems to be first of all, how do they have tag team championships when it seems like there's maybe like three tag teams?
They keep switching it back and forth between those three or whatever tag team. New Day,
yeah.
they're not old guys. They're in their 30s. I think they're 10-time tag team champions.
Yeah, as soon as I saw that it was the tag team championship was the New Day against somebody, it was like, that's basically every WrestleMania now. It's been like got to be 4 years, 5 years in a row where it seems like they're wrestling against somebody. It seemed like there was one stretch there where it was 2 or 3 years in a row. I think the tag team match was the same match.
Yeah, like New Day against the Usos or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely like, even when I'm thinking about like in the 80s and it was tagged, was that ever it never really felt like it was that big of a deal. I think it was a bigger deal back in the 80s and 90s, but tag teams used to just be a couple of guys would team up, right? And they would have these, you know, the tag team matches, and it wouldn't be like there was an actual specific tag team.
Well, in the 80s, some guys came along that made tag team. They elevated it to where you really wanted to be a top-level tag team because you could make you really couldn't make that much money as a top-level tag team, you know, before the Road Warriors, before the British Bulldogs.
Okay.
And then there was a run of guys like that. The Steiner Brothers came along.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for the most part, you want to be a singles because that's where you make your money. You can make money as a top-notch tag team, but you can make a lot more as a top-notch single. So most guys that come along want to be a single. But you're right. When you observe that most tag teams are two guys that really couldn't hack it as singles or didn't think they could hack it as well as if they teamed up together and tried to do it that way. That's definitely what the New Day is. Those are like three guys who were okay. They're all right as singles, but then they became a tag team and actually had a lot better drawing power.
Okay. Yeah, if you go back to the first two Survivor Series, they did have a tag team match where it was a nightmare to follow because the guys were all around the ring to where they could only use the hard cam because they
That's right.
took up all the – but I'm telling you, it was the who's who of tag teams. And it really showed you how alive and well, and these weren't thrown together teams. I think the closest to a thrown together team during that time was Strike Force, which was Tito Santana and Rick Martel. But they were really over too on top of that, but it was like the who's who of tag teams, and it go through this. Now the thing, I think a lot of it comes down to payroll. If you have all these great tag teams, you're paying them, you're paying that much more for one match. And I think a common thing now is you have a bunch of people you can pair together, and then you've got your – I think if you go to AEW, you got the Young Bucks, and I can think of – oh, kind of zip my tongue, the clubbing, the ones where they're
– Oh, the Private Party.
Private Party. And I'd be – you know, the other ones, there's a lot of them are just kind of put together. And I think if you go beyond the New Day currently – I would have to pause. I mean, because, there's Dolph Ziggler and the...
Ziggler and Robert Roode are the SmackDown tag champs.
Yeah, and he even dumped his great... The most over thing about him was his music, and he even dumped that so they could have unified music and it's the same outfit and everything. Otherwise, it's classic where, like, Chris Jericho and Big Show would be Jericho, where they would just throw two people together. I don't care for that. But it's rare now to have... I think the New Day and the Usos are about all you got for a true tag team.
Right. All the other ones are basically two guys who are okay as singles, and they decide, let's be a tag team, and we can have possibly more success. But I think that's how it usually goes for most head. And then sometimes, you know, you have magic, and you can actually, you know, be better known as a unit. You know, the Killer Bees are
Edge and Christian.
Kind of, you know, yeah, a couple guys that are, you know, those that's two guys that came up together and grew up together, and so there's an obvious connection there, and they even got portrayed as brothers, even though they're not brothers. So yeah, that's rare when you got two guys like that break in at the same time, and that's real natural. But I was thinking of like Killer Bees were a top tag team in the 80s in that time that you're talking about, those teams in the Survivor Series that were really good together, but they just, you know, they didn't start out as a tag team. Jim Brunzell was doing his own thing and Brian Blair was doing his, and they just, yeah, let's get together, let's see how it works. And they had their, you know, their striped trunk, so they decided we're bees now. We're going to buzz around the ring and we're going to pretend like we're bees, and it got over and it worked. And the
yeah,
Rockers,
it was interesting.
Same thing.
Their gimmick with the mask was actually a heel move.
We're
going to put on mask
off
and cheat. It was mm-hmm. really weird how they were doing a heel move to get over, and it was like okay.
Yeah, but it was a gimmick, and part of it, you know, just trying to be different, just trying to do something that catches on and gets people's attention, and you know, it's not easy. It's certainly not easy, but it's definitely not the same these days with tag teams. It's basically you got a whole bunch of guys, teams where it's two guys that kind of like, what are we doing? What are you doing? And you know, I'm not doing much. Well, I'm not doing much. You know what? Let's be a tag team. Let's see if that works out. Yeah, so
we're going to be together
right
for 4
now.
Months until we break up and have a blow off match.
Correct. That's about it. So there's another match on the SmackDown side, Jay, that you didn't see any build for on reading about Raw, because it's on SmackDown. And this one's a little iffy because it's Apollo Crews versus Big E. They're feuding over the Intercontinental title. They're a couple of black guys, right? So they had Apollo Crews turn heel on Big E at some point. You know, started out as, you know, let's have a straight up match and just see who's the best guy. And, you know, it's sportsmanship. And then Apollo Crews couldn't beat Big E, so he got frustrated and turned heel on him. That's fine. That happens all the time. That's there's no issue making that a feud. But what happened was they turned Apollo Crews from an American from Stone Mountain, Georgia, with no accent, smiling black dude. They turned him heel, and all of a sudden he became a Nigerian prince with this thick-ass accent that you can't understand what he's saying.
And a spear.
And chucking a spear. Because we know, if there's anything we know about Vince McMahon, we know that he loves black guys in his wrestling league chucking a spear. He loves that shit. So they have Apollo Crews turn into a Nigerian prince guy, and they have him challenge Big E for the Intercontinental title in a Nigerian drum fight. I don't know what that is. They haven't explained what that is. I have no idea. I guess they'll explain it on SmackDown coming up on Friday. They couldn't just have him. They couldn't just have the black guys have a regular old feud. They couldn't just have him turn on Big E because he's jealous of him, and then they have a feud over the Intercontinental title. They had to turn him into a spear-chucking Nigerian prince guy with the African war ritual Nigerian drum fight bullshit. I'm sorry, I might be oversensitive, but I don't like that crap at all. Because
my wife, we were watching that. My wife looked at me and she's like, "You've got to be kidding me!" I'm like, "They saw us him, but his ass." And my wife's like, "I don't even want to know what the hell that means."
No,
I explained
no,
to her
don't.
How that Mr. America Tony Atlas got turned into Saba Simba, and she's like, "Say what?" And of course, I had to cue up the footage. She's like,
"Yeah,
I don't even know what to say."
I've explained that one to Jason before. Literally chucking a spear, literally. Yeah, Tony Atlas.
Peacock's
from
gonna love that.
Virginia.
but don't slap your leg. Just don't slap your leg.
Whatever you do, don't slap your leg while throwing a kick. Yeah, we referred to that a couple times, Jason. They actually banned in WWE. They actually sent a memo around the locker room last month, and they said all the phony shit that you see on wrestling and the stomping the mat and the slapping your hand when you're throwing a punch and all that crap, all the stuff that you've seen for years and years and years that you saw was fake when you were 6-7 years old, and I didn't
yeah.
see it for years. They decided to ban slapping your leg while throwing a kick because that was not realistic.
That's what's not realistic. Okay.
Right.
So pretending to kick them in the face without leaving a mark. Okay. Add the sound effect. Not okay.
But slapping your leg while doing that. Oh no, we can't have that. That makes us look bad.
Right.
And yeah. I love it how they try to explain it saying, well, it's gotten out of hand where they're really obvious about it. I'm like, how do you not make it obvious to slap your leg?
It's kind of been obvious for 30 years. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Well, that's no different than where the guy would go to punch, but then he'd also, like, pound his chest at the same time. or
stomp the mat.
Yeah.
It stomped the mat. And the mat during big events, well, now it's always done, but during the main pay-per-views back in the day, the mat was mic'd. So it really had effect. But when I'd go to a house show, they wouldn't, you know, that cost too much money. So it'd be like, oh, that's why this is a house show. I don't know if you guys have ever been to a house show, but that's a totally different experience.
Oh, yeah, I've been to plenty. Instead of sounding like a thunderclap when the guy gets body slammed at a house show, it basically sounds like he fell on some mousetraps. And that really is what's under the ring sometimes is set mousetraps. That's no joke. But yeah, I definitely have a problem with the Apollo Crews thing. I got a problem with the celebrity involvement with Bad Bunny. I don't know. He may wind up being pretty good in the ring because clearly he's, you know, familiar with the product. So that's fine. So they might be able to prep him and make that match somewhat passable. But in general, I don't like the idea of guys dropping in for that's two guys that are definitely having a match at WrestleMania with Bad Bunny and Omos that have never had an actual full-blown wrestling match. And the first one's going to be at WrestleMania. That's at least two. And that's not counting three, which is this internet chode Logan Paul, this YouTube idiot that's going to get involved in another match that's on SmackDown, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. I don't know how involved he's going to be, but he's going to be there. He's already a part of the angle. And he's just kind of in the middle of it for no good reason, except he's a celebrity. He's a quote-unquote celebrity. I never heard of the guy. But but that's WrestleMania. You get a lot of celebrity involvement. I understand that, but I just don't like them necessarily being in the middle of the matches because it really puts a bad light on the product if they don't perform the way they're supposed to. It makes it look really bad. I remember Rob Gronkowski couple years ago in the Battle Royals and then how fake it looked when he's jumping in there and smiling and having a good time and he's supposed to be selling being hurt but he's got a big smile on his face and it's like God. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Oh, don't forget Drew Carey in the Royal Rumble.
I'm trying desperately to forget Drew Carey in the Royal Rumble. Desperately trying.
Oh man.
That's
but
the,
nothing
will
ever beat Jay Leno. Jay Leno getting putting a hammer lock, an arm bar on Hulk Hogan. Nothing will ever be worse than that.
Jay, if you, the absolute goldmine of celebrities beating up supposedly top-notch wrestlers and the wrestlers having to sell it and make it look good, Jay Leno and was he teaming with Paige, with Diamond Dallas Paige? Against Hulk Hogan and Dennis Rodman. And Hogan actually had to sell like Jay Leno was hurting him. And it's like, really?
That's what happened when you get your celebrities from Wish.
Or that's what happens when Eric Bischoff is involved and trying to get as much publicity as he possibly can. Because Eric Bischoff would sell his soul to the devil. He absolutely would sell anything on anybody if he could get that celebrity rub. So. The golden days of WCW, that's a long time ago. Jerry, it's going on midnight. We've kept you long enough. We're going to let you go. Once again, appreciate you taking the time to join our show and our WrestleMania preview. You do it every year, and I cannot thank you and appreciate you enough. And hopefully the shows will be I guess better than we think. I think NXT is going to be great those two nights that NXT does it, Wednesday and Thursday, and then WrestleMania Saturday and Sunday. Kind of got to cross your fingers and hope for the best with those two shows. But we're both looking forward to the women's matches, I believe, and then hopefully they will come through as advertised.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, thanks, Jerry.
That is Jerry, the wrestling expert, who joins us every year to preview WrestleMania. This is the 37th WrestleMania that we're getting ready for coming up this weekend. And it's going to be a thing in front of people again. We've had the baseball in front of fans, and that's been fun to watch.
It's been good to see. It doesn't feel as icky.
No, it's not quite as clean. You still have a bunch of people standing around with no masks, so it's still a little bit like, I don't know, but it's still a welcome sight. It's still, once again, getting a little bit back to normal. More on our after show when we come back. All right, into our very abbreviated VIP after show, because both of us have to work tomorrow, so we won't be at too long.
I don't have to work tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to bed.
Yeah, I do have to work tomorrow. The one thing I definitely wanted to say is, oh, my God, did you completely whoop my ass in the March Madness bracket?
Wait a minute. Whoa. you waited till the after show.
Hey, I didn't have to mention it at all.
That's true. You didn't.
And
have
we had
to,
a guest. I didn't want to take up time with the guest.
And I was late because I actually came out to the computer to get on the show because I had the computer on, and the computer, like the monitor was green. I was like, oh, so it does that every once in a while. So I had to restart the computer. So I ended up, once you do a hard restart, it takes like 5 minutes for everything to get back to where you feel safe opening up the browser.
Sure.
So, yeah, but I got it. No, but yes, thank you. I took out a few years of frustration, I guess, losing in the brackets to you.
Well, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to top this, where you had Gonzaga going all the way to the final before losing the undefeated season to a Texas college. The only thing you had wrong was the wrong Texas college. You had Houston instead, it was Baylor. But other than that, you fucking nailed it, man.
Baylor was the other Final Four team for me.
Yeah. You had three of the Final Four, and man, that's I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to top something like that. I just want to pick the champ right, and but you almost had the whole finals correct. You almost had both teams in, and you definitely had Gonzaga dropping that first L in the national title game, and they dropped it, and they dropped it hard. They got whooped tonight.
So yeah, no, I'll take that win because I believe you had maxed out your points by the time the Sweet 16 rolled around.
Yes, it feels like I maxed out my points right when the tournament began, basically.
So I'll take it. I don't know what I win. Normally the winner would get to pick which broadcast of the draft they get to watch.
Right, except I don't know which broadcast you'd be able to watch because you don't have cable anymore. So that's
I will probably make it a point, since you can do basically streaming on demand almost. You can buy... I could just buy a month of something or do a trial of something so that I can at least watch the draft. Cause I will watch the draft.
Okay.
You know, or listen to it on the radio in some combination. You know, normally I don't know what nights they're doing. I think it's Thursday night. It starts usually.
I meant to look that up before the damn show started. So let me right now.
It's in May. Right? It's in May?
Yeah. It's after the Oscars. It's after the Kentucky Derby, I believe.
So, I'll figure out some way so that I can watch it or stream it. But I definitely want to be able to catch the draft because that's our one, you know, Kings of Non Sequitur sort of football-heavy show.
Right. And it's something that's a lot better to watch. Just like Monday Night Raw, it's much better to watch than to try to keep up online. So you definitely want to actually watch the happenings of the draft.
Yeah, so I know last year I started watching it at work and switched over to the radio and then got home and started watching it again. So I actually ended up getting a little bit of I got the TV and the radio, and I actually enjoyed the radio call of it more.
Interesting.
I just liked whoever they had on the radio actually doing the commentating. was doing a better job than whoever they had on the TV.
All right, draft event info. Thursday, April 29th.
Oh, so it's this month?
Yeah, I thought it was
May. Wow.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
All right.
Coming up from Cleveland.
Oh.
And this is definitely the wrong year for me to lose March Madness and have to watch the ESPN version, because did you hear who they're having host the draft now on ESPN?
Because it had been – last year was it Trey Wingo?
It's been Wingo all these years. And with all his sort of lame side cracks, he was almost trying to be like Berman with the sort of witty jokes and whatnot. But at least it was somewhat palatable. And for whatever reasons only the ESPN execs know, they took him down. They announced this a couple months ago. They took down Wingo, and now the host of the NFL draft is Mike Greenberg. I do not know why they decided to do that, but I'll do it. I'll bite the bullet. I'll be watching the ESPN, and maybe the little bit of upside is I'll get to critique the first night of Greeny ever doing that and see just how bad it is. And I won't have to rely on Twitter to tell me how bad. I'll actually get to see it myself.
You'll see
but that's
live in person.
That's my punishment for losing March Madness as bad as I did. I have to see Greeny do the draft. So,
Good luck to me.
Let's
take another show here. At some point, we can go over some of the other goings on. We can talk about our baseball draft, which I want to do a little bit more of a thorough breakdown of than like the 5 minutes I probably got left in me here tonight.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because that was an event. Unlike any
other. Was a thing. Definitely a thing.
And we want to break down. I got to break down my vacation and tell you about how horrible it was, but we had a great time.
Sure, of course. I was trying to look up the Oscars thing that Dave, I don't know if I had told you, Dave did a hold of me, and he's definitely up for doing the Oscars show that Sunday, April 25th. And then that means the draft will be coming up very that week, several days later.
Yeah.
The 28th is Thursday. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. So we'll probably, I'd say sometime between now and the Oscars show, we can drop in a potpourri show here next week sometime.
Yep. Sounds good. Maybe next weekend.
Yeah. Do something.
Catch up. Yeah, catch up on the draft and your vacation and other odds and ends.
Yeah, we got a couple of weeks of baseball under our belt. You know, it's lots of stuff going on. Always lots of stuff going on. And even if there isn't anything going on, we'll fill 2 hours.
We'll find a way to have stuff going on. That's true. All right, sounds good. So I think we're about finished here.
I struggled to stay awake for about the last 20 minutes of that show, but I did it.
Yeah, I didn't even touch on AEW with Jerry, which I intended to, but it was. I looked at the clock and I'm like, oh, we really did kill the whole 90 minutes with WrestleMania. So let me let him go. But yeah, I'm sure we'll get into it next year. You know, the AEW it's fun, man. I already explained it or described it when they first started, and nothing's changed. They still seem like the theater troupe that's just doing it for the love of theater. Every time I see AEW, they look like they're having so much fun doing what they're doing. It's not nearly as serious as WWE. If you're interested at all in watching some wrestling in which they actually look like they're having fun, I would suggest you find some AEW. They're on Wednesday nights on TNT, by the way.
Okay.
And they're also on YouTube. That's about it for us. Thank you for getting in there. And Jerry, both of you put a scare into me because neither one of you were there when the show started. Because Jerry kept for the whole 15 minutes before the show, he kept trying to get in on using the computer link. And I don't know why, but it wasn't working. I couldn't hear him. None of the times he came in, I could hear him. So finally he called in on the phone line, and that was a damn good phone line. He used, that was a very clear signal.
Yeah, it was clear.
Yeah, that was excellent. He kept dropping and coming back, so that was a bad thing. But I seamlessly got him back in each time, so he didn't really miss much. So that was good. But yeah, thanks to Jerry, thanks to you, thanks to both of you for eventually getting on there. But I was by myself the first minute. I was like, hey, welcome to our WrestleMania.
Well, you know, if anybody can talk about wrestling by themselves on air for 90 minutes, it's you.
It will probably be me. That's a good point. All right. Yeah, next weekend they're still aiming for to get back on here and catch up on some odds and ends. All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. The Kings of Non Sequitur version, our WrestleMania preview, living on the edge with Edge, and the 47-year-old is going to win the title on Sunday, and I don't know why. But I don't run WWE, so I don't have a say in the matter. We'll be back in a couple of weeks or so next weekend. We're aiming for to catch up on other things, baseball and whatnot. And we will talk to you then. Hopefully you enjoyed our WrestleMania preview, and hopefully you enjoy the wrestling that's coming up this week, NXT, WWE, AEW, all of that. And my uncle, thanks to my uncle for having a cameo and coming in as well. All right, everyone enjoy the rest of your evening, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.